Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 13, The Glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, Texts Number 11 and 12. Adhi Majhavasaneshu Vairagyakyanda Samyutam Hari Lila Katha Vratta Mrittanandita Satsuram Sarva Vedanta Saramyad Brahmatmaikatva Lakshanam Vasvadvityam Tannishtam Kavalyaika Prihojanam Adi. In the beginning, Madhya, the middle, Avasaneshu, and the end, Paragya, concerning renunciation of material things, Akyanha, with narrations, Samjutam, full, Hari Lila, of the pastimes of Lord Hari. Katabrata, of the many discussions. Amrita, by the nectar. Anandita, in which are made ecstatic. Satsuram, the saintly devotees and demigods. Sarva Vedanta, of all the Vedanta. Saram, the essence. Yat, which. Brahma, the absolute truth. Atma Ekatva, in terms of non-difference from the spirit soul. Alakshanam, characterized. Vastu, the reality. Advityam, one without a second. Tunishtam, having that as its prime subject matter. Kavalya, exclusive devotional service. Eka, the only. Priyojanam, ultimate goal. Translation. From beginning to end, the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of narrations that encourage renunciation of material life, as well as nectarian accounts of Lord Hari's transcendental pastimes, which give ecstasy to the saintly devotees and demigods. This Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta philosophy, because its subject matter is the absolute truth, which, while non-different from the spirit soul, is the ultimate reality, one without a second. The goal of this literature is exclusive devotional service unto that supreme truth. Purport. Vairagya, renunciation, means giving up everything that has no relation with the absolute truth. Saintly devotees and demigods are enthused by the nectar of the Lord's spiritual pastimes, which are the essence of all Vedic knowledge. Vedic knowledge elaborately negates the ultimate reality of material things by emphasizing their temporary, fleeting existence. The ultimate goal is Vastu, the factual substance, which is Arvityam, one without a second. That unique absolute truth is a transcendental person far beyond the mundane categories and characteristics of personality found in our pale material world. Thus the ultimate goal of Srimad Bhagavatam is to train the sincere reader in love of Godhead. Lord Krishna is supremely lovable because of his eternal transcendental qualities. The beauty of this world is a dim reflection of the ultimate unlimited beauty of the Lord. Without compromise, Srimad Bhagavatam consistently declares the glories of the absolute truth and is therefore the supreme spiritual literature, awarding a full taste of the nectar of love of Krishna in full Krishna consciousness. The translation again. From beginning to end, the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of narrations that encourage renunciation of material life, as well as nectarian accounts of Lord Hari's transcendental pastimes, which give ecstasy to the saintly devotees and demigods. This Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta philosophy because its subject matter is the absolute truth, which, while not different from the spirit soul, is the ultimate reality, one without a second. The goal of this literature is exclusive devotional service unto that supreme truth. So here, Sudha Goswami again describing some of the characteristics of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which help us to see the glory or the wonderful nature of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In essence, as we'll see in this chapter and verses that have come, verses that are coming, that this Srimad Bhagavatam, in the previous verse, we heard that it was actually revealed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to Lord Brahma. So it is, it has a transcendental origin coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Lord Krishna wants that knowledge to be there from the very beginning of material creation and passed down from the supreme head of the Sampradaya all the way down to present day. And yeah. So here, Sudha Goswami is offering a summary of the particular characteristic. You know, what is that? What is that Srimad Bhagavatam that the Lord, in the very beginning of creation, presented to Lord Brahma? Sudha Goswami is explaining that from the very beginning to the end, it is full of narrations that encourage renunciation of material life as nectarian accounts of Lord Hari's transcendental pastimes. So, now, he goes on to say that which has just been described, those pastimes, nectarian accounts of Lord Hari, and discussions on renunciation of material life, that actually constitutes the essence of philosophy. The essence of philosophy, or the conclusion of philosophy, is known as Vedanta. What is the essence of the conclusion of all philosophical understanding? That essence is found in the glories of Lord Hari. And becoming and furthermore, the essence of all knowledge is found not in just understanding the glories of Lord Hari, but but in actually reviving one's eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord and coming to the perfectional stage of pure love of God. So that is all stated here within this verse. In essence, this verse is describing Sambandha, Avideya and Prayojana, which are the three features of Vedic knowledge. All Vedic knowledge can be understood to be describing our relationship with the Supreme Lord. So to understand our relationship with the Supreme Lord, we need to understand the nature of the Supreme Lord himself, the nature of the living entities, the nature of the material energy which the living entities are entrapped in, the nature of the spiritual energy of the Lord, the nature of how the living entities can be either conditioned or liberated. All these different aspects of knowledge, a sambandha, or understanding. By that knowledge we can understand our relationship with the Absolute Truth. Described here that the Absolute Truth, which is, while not different from the spirit soul, right, still is the ultimate reality, one without a second. So the spirit soul is the marginal energy of the Lord. So the spirit soul is one with the Lord, being the energy of the Lord, and at the same time it is different from the Lord in that the Supreme Lord is the ultimate reality, the ultimate shelter of all his various manifestations by his energies. So that understanding, that is sambandha. Abhideya means establishing a relationship with the Lord. In order to do that, one has to become attached to the Lord. In order to become attached to the Lord, one has to become detached from the material world. And having become attached to the Lord, one should come to the point of attachment, up to the point of exclusive devotional service or prema bhakti. So, in essence, he is describing in this verse sambandha, abhideya and prayojana. A relationship with the Absolute Truth, how to establish that relationship, and what that perfection is, having established that, that is pure love of God. Kaivalya. Kaivalya, exclusive devotional service. Now, so in essence, there he's describing what is the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the Srimad Bhagavatam which was revealed by Lord Sri Krishna to Lord Brahma at the very beginning of creation. From the very beginning to the end. So actually you won't find that in any other literature. So the characteristics that he's stating here, they're exclusive characteristics of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Other literatures do not, from the start to the finish, set these goals so concisely and so elaborately. Ultimately, here it's described that the Srimad Bhagavatam contains knowledge to help us become detached from the material world. Becoming detached from the material world, there is the Vedic process. It is described as having, based on the Varnashram system, the four social orders, four spiritual orders. It helps to maintain society. People of all different modes of material nature can regulate their mind, regulate their senses, and in this way become purified and rise above the animal level of knowledge. Because there are three different types of knowledge. There is the knowledge of the animals, whereby they're completely conditioned by material energy. the knowledge of the Vedas is knowledge which helps us to become liberated. So a person who has second class knowledge means he has knowledge of how to become liberated. An animal doesn't have that knowledge. An animal just is completely conditioned and they have no knowledge of how they can rise above the material energy. Second class knowledge, you know, this Varnashram system, the rules and regulations, controlling the mind, controlling the senses, you know, reducing the control the material energy has over us. That is second class knowledge, and it means that we can become liberated. First class knowledge is the knowledge of the liberated person. They're already liberated. And those liberated persons may have knowledge of realization of the absolute truth, generally as Brahman or Paramatma. So, you know, renunciation as taught in the Vedas is helpful to bring one on the path of liberation, but it actually can't take you to devotional service. It takes you close to the door or close to the threshold, but it doesn't actually lead to devotional service. But it's very helpful. You know, a person who is a person who follows the Vedic process, they become, you know, they learn to control their mind, they learn to control their senses, and they appreciate the value of that, that it gives awards liberation. They understand that the way that they come to that point is by associating with saintly persons who are liberated or trying to be liberated and who can teach them this Vedic process. So that process allows the opportunity that among those saintly persons they may come across a devotee, and accepting them as a saintly person they may actually follow their guidelines and their advice, and by the association with the devotee they can actually may become Krishna conscious or take up devotional service. But renunciation alone and the Vedic process itself does not necessarily lead to devotional service. In fact, usually, if a person does not associate with a devotee, most likely they will take up an impersonal, you know, goal of life. And even if they get some realization of the super soul, they may have an impersonal understanding and want to merge within the super soul, and even then they may just attain the Brahma Jyoti platform of existence, of liberation, along with all the demons. Yeah, no, it's a fact. Along with all the demons and the enemies of Krishna who have been killed, they get to, they may merge into the Brahma Jyoti. But they can't actually attain the spiritual planets. They can't get to. And that one has to associate with devotees. So here it's described that this Kaivalya, exclusive devotional service, Kaivalyaika Paryojanam. Now, as described in this Srimad Bhagavatam, that exclusive devotional service is ultimately meant for Krishna. The Srimad Bhagavatam gives that knowledge of how to actually attain one's relationship with the Supreme Lord up to the understanding of Lord Sri Krishna. Which is very, very rare. Generally, we see that even those who have followed the Vedic process, and somehow or another associated with devotees and therefore become Vaishnavas, still the understanding of Krishna is very, very rare. Even the regulated Vaidhi Bhakti does not necessarily lead to the Prema Bhakti. Well, actually, it doesn't. It doesn't. It cannot actually take you to the platform of the Prema Bhaktas of Krishna Loka. Yesterday we were hearing about Gopala Bhatta Goswami. Who can tell me some of that story? Who is Gopala Bhatta Goswami? What was his story?
Yeah.
He got the association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In Sri Rangam, yeah. How old was he? Yeah, young boy, a few years old. Yeah. Yes, yeah, he developed deep attachment for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yeah. He installed the deity of Radha Ramant later on, so yes, because when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed there for 4 months discussing with his father, Venkata Bhatta, and then his uncles were there, Prabhadananda and Thirumala, I think it was. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, or was leaving, Gopala Bhatta wanted to go with him. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to him that, you stay here and you look after your father and mother until they pass away. And then you go to Vrindavan and take shelter of Rupa and Sanatana. And he advised his uncle, Prabhadananda, that, when the time is right, you send him to Vrindavan, he takes shelter of Rupa and Sanatana, and you give him this letter. So they had a letter, he wrote a letter, so that, when he got there, he would give the letter to Rupa and Sanatana, and they would see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, "Oh, yes, we must take care of this." So, while he was there, actually, the conversation with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Venkata Bhatta, did you hear that yesterday? No. While he was there, Gokula Bhatta Goswami, their whole family were in the Sri Sampradaya of Ramanujacharya. They were worshippers of Lakshmi Narayan. I think these days, even in the Sri Sampradaya, they worship Ram, Sita Ram. Prabhupada mentions that. I think many that originally worshipped Lakshmi Narayan, now they worship Ram. The worship of Krishna is very, very difficult to understand. So these personalities were actually great Vedic scholars. They are very, very learned. Gopala Bhatta Goswami. They were born in Brahmana families. Not all of the Goswamis were Brahmanas. We know that Rupa and Sanatan were Brahmanas, born in Brahmana families, but then became practically Muslims. Raghunath Das Goswami was not born in a Brahmana family, therefore we call him Raghunath Das. Das generally means he's coming not from a Brahmana family. And but Gopala Bhatta Goswami, he was born in a very, very scholarly. We know his uncle later became, the whole family, later, as a result of this conversation with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they became worshippers of, they actually changed Sampradaya to Gauranga Mahaprabhu, Gaudiya
Sampradaya. Even now the family, the same family
that Vrindavan
brother
and
Vrindavan.
The same family?
The same family,
yeah.
Still there.
Right, okay. So, they... Though worshippers of Lakshmi Narayan, Prabhupada Saraswati, he wrote many Vaishnava literatures. There's one famous work where he wrote, hundreds and hundreds of slokas on the glories of Vrindavan Dham. So, they had a discussion with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Vyankara Bhatta that he wanted to know. He said, "I worship my Lord Sri Krishna, and you worship your Lord Narayan. But why is it that Lakshmi, the husband of Narayan, is trying to become an associate of Lord Krishna, like this? And therefore the scriptures describe that she performed austerities for hundreds and hundreds of years, trying to attain the position that the gopis had, where they were able to embrace Krishna." So Vyankara Bhatta replied that yes, actually, Lord Krishna and Lord Narayan are in fact the same person. So he understood that. And what is wrong when the wife wants to be with her husband, whatever particular mood or dress he is in, like this? So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, yes, you have understood. He said, but can you tell me why she could not attain this goal? And Vyankara Bhatta said, that is far as my understanding goes, so I actually cannot answer. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that unless one follows in the footsteps of the Brajavasis, the associates of Krishna in Krishna Loka, one cannot enter into those Brajavasi pastimes, even if one is Lakshmi. Now, he explained that the difficulty was that she wanted to enjoy the pastimes of the gopis with Lord Krishna in the same body as Lakshmi, as the goddess of fortune. And he explained that actually that is not possible. So one actually has to, because the form of Lakshmi and the form of Lord Narayan, they're forms of the Lord which display the Lord's Aishwarya feature, or great opulence and majesty. And the form of Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan, especially the gopis, they display the Lord's feature of sweetness, or madhurya. So it was not possible. Actually, in Vrindavan, the residents of Vrindavan, none of them accept Krishna as God. They just accept him as the gopis accept him as their lover, as the beautiful Lord Sri Krishna, who's very very attractive, and Nandran and Yasoda and other persons in a parental relationship, they accept Krishna as someone that they look after, with paternal affection. His friends see him as an equal, or some of the friends may see him as slightly junior. In this way, you know, even those in a service attitude in Vrindavan, still they're accepting Krishna as, you know, an object of love more so than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're actually not accepting him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And although the gopis themselves also, although they are actually the goddess of fortune, you know, we sing Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, you know, Radha Madhava, Madhava is the husband of the goddess of fortune. The goddess of fortune ultimately is in her, you know, prime situation is Srimati Radharani, but Srimati Radharani appears as a, not in her feature as the, you know, all opulent goddess of fortune, but as a simple cowherd village girl. So, in this way, one cannot enter into those pastimes unless one actually follows in the footsteps of the residents in Vrindavan and learns that same mood of approaching Krishna, not as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but as one's lovable object. You know, in essence, the Ratha Yatra festival is based upon that same principle that Radharani met Krishna, and Radharani and the gopis, they met Krishna at the when Krishna went to Kurukshetra from Dwarka in a great procession because of the solar eclipse, and they wanted to perform different austerities and sacrifices in order to purify themselves and take advantage of the you know, influence of the solar eclipse in Kurukshetra. So Srimati Radharani, this is what the Ratha Yatra is based upon, she, you know, was saying to Krishna, well, you're the same Krishna, and you know, I'm the same Radharani, you know, you come back with me to Vrindavan, like this. But, and so, you know, her mood is that she wanted to take Krishna to Vrindavan. She did not want to be the lover of Krishna in Dwarka, because, you know, the sweetness of the loving affairs between Radha and the gopis, you know, finds its, you know, home in Vrindavan, because in Vrindavan you have all the beautiful forest setting, and you have the beautiful Jamuna River, and you know, so many beautiful flowers growing wildly there. You know, Krishna is not surrounded, he's not wearing royal dress. You know, they can dress him with you know, and decorate him with the flowers and the different clays and soils, you know, and gems from the forest. He's not surrounded by a huge army. You know, he's not surrounded by, you know, great sages, you know, like this. He's just, he's very, very much free for them to enjoy in the most beautiful setting. And therefore, you know, the loving pastimes between Radha and Krishna are very, very sweet and you know, very accessible. And Krishna's beauty is, you know, particularly enhanced in that setting in the forest of Vrindavan. Whereas, you know, literally the setting of Dwarka is just like a big distraction. You know, it's trying to, it's like, you know, when people get married, they go on a honeymoon, you know, that, you know, devotees don't necessarily do that, but a lot of the non-devotees, they go on a honeymoon, and not that devotees can't do that, but they like to spend some time together in a setting which is appropriate just for knowing each other on a very affectionate, you know, level, like that. Not that, you know, when people get married, okay, you know, let us get our laptops and our, you know, calculators out, and there's an accounting convention in, Detroit, and we will go and, you know, spend the first month of our marriage, you know, there. You see? So, you know, Vrindavan is the, you know, beautiful place for the pastimes, not just for the gopis and Krishna, but for all the residents of Vrindavan. It is such a natural place, and there, there is no one, you know, in fact, you know, people aren't worshipping Krishna as God. See, that is the other problem, you know, in Dwarka, and you go to Dwarka, you know, everyone is, you know, offering respect and worship to Krishna, that, oh, you are, we have understood from the Vedas, that you are non different from the super soul. You know, you are that same person who has appeared within our family, and therefore many great sages, even the demigods, would actually, you know, come to visit. You know, in the story of Satyajit, that when the you know, Satyajit came with the Shamantaka jewel, they said, "Oh, the sun god has come," and people weren't astonished because they understood there were so many demigods, you know, that will actually come and visit Krishna and Dwarka. But in Vrindavan, you know, when the demigods come to visit, they actually remain unseen because they know that Krishna doesn't want them. They have no access, and not to disturb that, you know, beautiful setting. So in this way, Radharani is, you know, calling Krishna, asking him, you know, you please come back to Dwarka. And of course, it appears, of course, that Krishna cannot go back to Dwarka, and therefore they have to go back alone. But in actuality, Krishna is in Dwarka. It appears that Krishna cannot go back to Vrindavan. And that the gopis go back to Vrindavan, the residents of the Vrajavasis go back to Vrindavan without Krishna. That's how it appears. But factually, Krishna never actually leaves Vrindavan. This mood of love for Krishna is also described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, you know, within the Srimad Bhagavatam, it actually describes that, you know, even Lakshmi, she cannot attain, you know, those sweet association of Krishna like the gopis and the other residents of Vrindavan, despite her position, despite her austerities. But Srimad Bhagavatam does describe, well, how can you attain that? By following in the footsteps of those, you know, Vrajavasis. So that is there described in Srimad Bhagavatam, associating. But even more, Srimad Bhagavatam describes how that mood of service in the Vrajavasis have can be increased to a very, very intensely relishable pitch of love, and that is done by learning to, again, following in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan, and learning to love those residents, love Krishna in the mood of separation. That is actually, we see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, he taught this mood of how to worship Krishna in the mood of separation. And therefore we see that the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they also, you know, followed in his footsteps, because that mood of separation, it increases one's love for Krishna to a very, very high level of love and purity, very, very relishable. Without that mood of separation, one's love for Krishna does not reach the same intensity. The example is sometimes given that when, you know, for those someone that they love very dearly, the example is given that, you know, the husband or the wife, when the partner is away, you know, they're missing that person intensely, waiting for them to come back, you know, that day. And then the longer they're away, when there's some actual attachment there, and of course when that person is there present constantly, you know, they don't have that intensity. You know, person may, you know, the partner walks into another room, you don't even know that they're gone. They've been gone for an hour, you didn't even notice. But you know, when a person is actually gone for a long period of time, then the intensity, they start to think about that person, or, you know, and just think about all the wonderful things about them, and you can't wait to, you know, hear their voices, you know, like this. So in that way, Krishna knows that even for the you know, what to speak of helping people come to the platform of you know, love of God, even those on that platform of love of God, Krishna knows that that is a very relishable, you know, that by their intensely thinking of Krishna in that mood of separation, Krishna becomes very, very fully present. Therefore we see the Goswamis, they're always, you know, praying that, you know, Radhe, Krishna, you know, where are you? You know, are you on the hill of Govardhan? And they were going there, and then they'd be, you know, singing and chanting, you know, where is Krishna? You know, are you by the bank of the Jamuna? And they'd go there, and they'd be singing and chanting and dancing. Are you here? And they would be always looking, searching, you know, where are you? You know, they weren't in the mood that, we saw Krishna yesterday, you know, business finished, you know, that's enough like that. Yeah, we've seen Krishna, done that, been there, let's move on. You know, they're always in the mood of, you know, just always searching for Krishna. And of course, that mood of separation also indicates that the devotees actually, you know, have experienced, you know, the presence of Lord Sri Krishna. You know, when something is so wonderful and so sweet, you know, you cannot get enough of that. You know, if someone is not developing some sense of a mood of separation from Krishna, it is because they've not actually experienced Krishna, you know, properly. Because you know, if one gets just a little taste of Krishna's presence, Krishna's sweetness, it naturally makes you want to, you know, always be searching after that. And there's no point. It is so wonderful, so exquisite. Therefore, you see, you know, the taste of associating with Krishna is so wonderful that even Lakshmi, you know, she's with, you know, just from what she, from her understanding and, you know, association, what she has understood and realized about Krishna, and she's thinking, yes, you know, here is Narayan, but she's trying to get Krishna, you know, so that, you can just imagine, you know, what is the taste of Krishna consciousness? That she's there enjoying Vaikuntha as the consort, you know, the one wife of Lord Narayan, and she's thinking, oh, but you know, somehow or another she's got just the slightest taste of Krishna consciousness, and she's just neglecting everything and performing austerities, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years. Let me get some. So, you know, that is actually the symptom of Krishna's. Even Lord Narayan is attracted to Krishna. We see that actually, you know, in the Krishna book, Mahavishnu, you know, who's an expansion from Lord Narayan, he took the Brahmana's sons. The Brahmana kept having children, they kept disappearing. But Mahavishnu, because Mahavishnu wanted to have association with Krishna. So, and even Krishna himself, so he is Krishna, but he is thinking, you know, sometimes he has seen his reflection in the puddle or some water or something. And he is wanting to taste. And therefore he is thinking that, you know, if I could taste this Krishna consciousness, you know, to do that, I actually need to take the position of Radharani and see, you know, what is Radharani tasting in associating with me, and when I, you know, and when she loves me, what does that, you know, how does that, what is she relishing in loving me? And when I love her in return, what is she relishing there? In this way, even Krishna wants to get a little taste, you know, of Krishna consciousness. And therefore, you know, he eternally manifests as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam is actually giving us not only the understanding of Krishna, but giving us the process that if you take shelter and follow in the footsteps of the Brajavasis, you can attain that which is searched after by even Lakshmi, by even Narayan, by the greatest of saints and sages, and even by Krishna himself. Now, there is nothing higher. So, you know, in this way, Srimad Bhagavatam gives us the absolute highest nectarian manifestation of the Absolute Truth, which is completely unknown, as we said, even by persons who, to speak of followers of the Vedas performing the various austerities to come to the level of Brahman or Paramatma realization. Even Vaishnavas, you know, such as, you know, great scholars like Venkata Bhatta, you know, could barely understand the nature of Krishna. But as soon as one comes in association with someone who's relishing Srimad Bhagavatam, so in this case it was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is relishing Srimad Bhagavatam, and therefore he's giving Venkata Bhatta that, you know, through Srimad Bhagavatam you should hear about Krishna. And then, so, it is very, very rare, even for Vaishnavas, to actually understand, unless they, for them to understand Krishna, unless they come in contact with a devotee who thoroughly understands Srimad Bhagavatam and knows that, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, he said that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana. The ultimate goal of life is love of God, not liberation. Pure love for Krishna. And the best method to attain that is that method followed by the gopis of Vrindavan. The processes of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, hearing and chanting about Krishna. Ultimately, they bring one to the platform of love of God. And by associating with very, very elevated devotees who are, fixed up in the mood of the Brajavasis, one can transform that love of God into higher and higher and higher different stages of pure love, even up to, you know, this love in separation. And we see that, throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, one of the examples we get is Uddhava. Uddhava originally, although of course Uddhava is a Nitya Siddha devotee, but in his pastimes, he is a resident of Dwarka, and he is a devotee of Krishna, of course, from the very beginning of his life. But his understanding of Krishna's feature as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, the source of Narayana, was not properly, it didn't manifest, let's put it this way. From Uddhava's very beginning, he used to, even when he was a child of 5 years old, he would make a little doll of Krishna and worship Krishna as his Lord, like this. And he would be so absorbed that even when his mother would call him, oh, time to come and have something, he'd just be so absorbed he wouldn't even worry about eating. So he was a devotee of Krishna from the very beginning. But in his pastimes, because as a Nitya Siddha, his understanding was not complete. That was what he was manifesting. But Krishna allowed him to rise above. So therefore, amongst all the residents of the Yadus in Dwarka, Uddhava is the best. So generally we say that Prahlad is the best of Vaishnavas. Above Prahlad, there is the Pandavas. They are considered on a higher level. Above the Pandavas, there are the Yadus in Dwarka, because of their constant association and their, greater level of, wanting to be constantly associated. And of all the Yadus in Dwarka, Uddhava is considered the best. Uddhava is considered the best because he actually, his understanding was far beyond all the Yadus in Dwarka. Krishna, sent him to Vrindavan to witness firsthand the activities of the Brajavasis and to learn, when he saw their love, he's coming from Dwarka and thinking, we love, everyone loves Krishna. But when he saw the residents of Vrindavan, he was thinking, what love do we have at all? They're so intense, their love is just so intense, it's just, cannot be described. Just complete absorption in intense love and just absolutely devastated by even the moment separation from Krishna. Something that he had never experienced, even a touch of that in Dwarka, where everyone loves Krishna. So he saw and he therefore came to that. So he was actually elevated to that very advanced stage of appreciating, and therefore Uddhava, he actually stays in Vrindavan in the form of a creeper. So there's one creeper there somewhere, it might be by the Radha Kund, and he resides there. and, you know, always absorbed in the pastimes of the Lord Sri Krishna, like that. So, but he did that because he followed in the footsteps of the Brajabasis. So it doesn't matter whether one is Lakshmi, Narayan, or Resident Dwarf or Mathuri. In order to actually come to that level of the love of the Brajabasis, you know, one follows the processes of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, and gradually that bringing one to the point of Prema Bhakti. But even on that platform of Prema Bhakti, one must associate with those steeped in the Brajabasi mood in order to actually imbibe that love. So, in this way, all of that is in the Srimad Bhagavatam. See, what to speak of those who are not even devotees? You know, what literature can they have that, you know, has anything? And even the worshippers, even those who study Vedanta, you know, or, you know, the various sutras of Patanjali, you know, there is. And even the Vaishnavas who actually read the Vaishnava literatures and sometimes even read the Srimad Bhagavatam, still, for them, unless they actually hear from a Vaishnava who's also on that Brajabasi platform, even Vaishnavas cannot understand. It's very, very confidential, but it's actually all there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it is the supreme literature. The goal is the supreme, the method is the supreme, the bhaktas are the supreme, everything about the, and it is also supreme because there is nothing else. There is, you know, it's like eating a mango where there's no pip and skin. Srimad Bhagavatam, it's just all nectar, you know, from start to finish. It's like a gulab jamun, you know. It's just the whole thing is nectar. You just pop the whole thing in your mouth. So what is the method of the Brajabasis? The method of the Brajabasis, of course, is that they are always, you know, hearing specifically about the pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna. So they're always meditating upon the particular form of Krishna in particular and Krishna's pastimes, and to remove any obstacles that prevents one from coming to that platform of always being absorbed in Krishna, there are many different pastimes within the Srimad Bhagavatam, as we discussed, which help to purify the heart. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that, you know, in Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, that there are where Krishna kills the various demons. Many of those pastimes are there to help us to remove particular obstacles from our heart, such as, I think, Agasura. Agasura represents envy, and by killing the Agasura demon, we meditate upon that. It helps to remove envy from our heart, because that envy is an obstacle on the path of attaining the love of the, you know, bhaktas. So the Srimad Bhagavatam helps us to come to the point of full Krishna consciousness, but it also gives so many different pastimes of avatars and pastimes of Krishna, you know, in Dwarka and Mathura, gradually bringing us step by step to the proper level of understanding and meditation, and also helping us to remove, you know, the obstacles. Because unless one is on a very elevated platform, it is not possible to imitate these Brajabasis and always think of Krishna. And it, generally, if one tries to do so without being properly purified, they can create a lot of havoc in their devotional service. So one has to be very, very careful. And therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam also describes that we should worship the deities in the 11th canto, very nicely described to Uddhava, the process of deity worship. But gradually, by worshipping the deities, we learn to become, you know, very respectful. And, you know, we learn that we're always conscious that we're approaching God. Or, you know, now the residents of Vrindavan, of course, they don't need to be aware that they're approaching God. For them, they're approaching the person who they love, and that they couldn't even bear the thought of, you know, the slightest discomfort for Krishna. For us, we have to come to that point, approaching, you know, understanding as we're approaching the deities, that always thinking of their pleasure and, you know, being very, very careful not to, create offences or do anything which is disturbing. So in effect, actually, the deity worship is a method in the Srimad Bhagavatam and chanting Hare Krishna without offence. All of these things gradually bring us to the point where we can always be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. But if we don't worship the deities nicely, we don't chant the Hare Krishna nicely, or we commit offences, we will never ever come to that platform of the Brajavasis just by imitation. And if we try to do that, that is very, very dangerous. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. Yes. Yeah.
So when I was doing that, I was wondering, there's no mention of the associates or the residents of associates of Mahaprabhu, the residents of Navadvip. Is that because they also follow in the footsteps of the Vaishvasis?
Well, it does mention them in one sense, the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yeah, it's saying that we should take shelter of those who are, you know, steeped in the mood of the Brajavasis. So, if one associates with the, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or his associates, you will see that they are the persons he's saying to associate with. They're the ones who are totally absorbed in, you know, thinking of, you know, the pastimes of Radha and Krishna and Mother Yasoda and the cowherd boyfriends and, you know. They have the qualifications of the devotees that Rupa Goswami is saying to associate with. So, although he's not directly, many things, you know, which are stated are somewhat confidential. The confidentiality protects the Srimad Bhagavatam and the teachings and the devotees themselves from rascals. Who literally just will cause a lot of disturbance to the actual devotees. You know, there are many devotees in Vrindavan and Mayapur who, you know, over the course of, you know, many hundreds of years have gone to great lengths to make sure that no one even thinks they're a devotee. Because as soon as someone thinks they're a saintly person, everyone wants to come and get some material benediction. Oh, you know, my child is sick, you bless her. You know, no one wants Krishna, but they all want, you know, the benediction. Oh, you know, we don't have so much money, you know, the roof's got a hole in it, you know, you give your blessing. There's one, Jagannath Das Babaji told of an associate he knew in Vrindavan, and that was happening to him, that somehow he gave a blessing and you know, someone got cured of something, so everyone was coming, you know, and he couldn't chant Hare Krishna, he couldn't, you know, perform his service. And so one wealthy person came and he said, I want you to give me a certain amount, you know, of money that I will use each month to hire someone who will clean up around my ashram. So he hired this very beautiful young girl, and she would clean around the ashram, and then everyone would be coming, and they'd say, oh, you know, who is it, you know, what is this nonsense person, you know, he's got this beautiful young girl cleaning up, and no, everyone stopped coming. And then he was very happy, and then he could chant Hare Krishna in peace. That's the fact. And Jagannath Das Babaji, he saw. You know, this is like a, you know, very advanced Prema Bhakti devotee. But, so, the nature of devotional service is somewhat confidential. To protect Krishna, to protect Radharani, protect the deities, protect the devotees, to protect the Srimad Bhagavatam. That confidentiality is maintained. But devotees always understand what's being said. Yeah.
Like in that purport to that verse, describing examples of devotees from different rasas, that they give examples of devotees to follow.
Yeah.
Is there a process for a devotee choosing a resident of Vrindavan?
There is a process. Generally, what happens is, when we become very, very purified, there is a natural inclination which is confirmed by Guru and, you know, and by the Lord, and then one may follow that natural inclination with good guidance of, you know, very elevated devotees. But sometimes that inclination may not even be there, and sometimes it's actually very, very elevated devotees who understand who you are in Krishna Loka. They can see, you know, they understand, you know, through Krishna, oh, this is, you know, and they will actually tell you, even when you don't have an inclination. But it all depends upon Krishna and the, you know, Vaishnavas. We can't, they're very, very dangerous for those who are not on that platform of, you know, pure love of God, or, you know, to imitate some artificial inclination that, oh, I'm a gopi, or I'm a peacock, or this or that. Very dangerous. Therefore, we have nectar of instruction to show you all the different stages like that. And in that purport, you'll see that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati gives a very nice summary of the different levels. You know, Shravana Das, and, you know, first is, he gives all the different levels, and then all the different levels of hearing and chanting, and then memory and absorption, finally coming to Samadhi. It's at that point of Samadhi that these things begin to manifest. Samadhi means that, you know, there's no sex desire. You know, that's always a real good indication. There's not even a pinch of sex desire, and that the devotee is just, has no, you know, material thoughts or attraction to the material energy, and nothing within the heart at all. That's a good starting point for the to then begin associating, you know, with devotees who may guide you in that direction. But anyone, you know, who has that you know, sex desire or attraction to the material energy, and begins and tries to imitate some inclination for, you know, that I'm this resident, that's very dangerous and completely unadvisable. Yeah. So it's all mentioned there in those purports. Yeah. Yep. I'm finished now. Go on. Sorry, say that again.
Like, I think Ananda Rai and Swarup Damodar, they were Vishaka and Lalita.
Yes.
And like Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, they were from, they were Manjari, so they definitely have the Braja.
Oh, yes, that's right, yes.
They're all from.
They have that Braja mood, yeah. Yeah, yes. That's right. That's a good point. Alright, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.